Accession number 22586, Reel 1.
Arthur Featherstone, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born at Routh, just on the outskirts of Beverley, in East Yorkshire.
How do you spell it?
R-O-U-T-H.
Which year was this?
23rd of May, 1920.
Did both your mother and father come from Routh?
No, actually, my father was born in Willoughby, which is just on the outskirts of Hull, and my mother, I'm not really sure about her predecessors. She was adopted by a couple in Willoughby. And I understand that she was descended from an upstairs-downstairs person. And one of the big houses where these people were employed. And she was adopted by this couple in Willoughby, and of course we call them, all us children, we call them grandma and grandfather, and but that's all we know, because my mother died young. She was only in her 60s, and because we were in the process of growing up. And we hadn't much chance to get to know previous history.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Routh?
No, because my father worked on the land, farming all his life, and we moved from place to place all the time. And I first started school. By this time, my father had moved to a place called Foxcover near Ripplingham. And it involved a walk of about 3 miles to school at South Cave, which that's where I first started school. And we had to do that every day. But previous to that, it was so an outlandish place that I was given the task of collecting separated milk from a village called Brantingham, which is quite near South Cave. And before setting off for school, I had to walk down there every morning and collect the milk for the day. And it was pretty hard times in those days.
Yeah. Did you go to any other schools apart from South Cave?
No. I went to South Cave School, and I ended my education there at South Cave School at the age of 14.
Did you get a job on leaving school?
Oh, yes.
Doing what?
Well, I started off helping on the farm, and each November the people round about, all the farmers, got together, which was called Martimus Day, and they all assembled in the marketplace at Hull, and fathers took the sons there looking for employment for the future year. And my father obviously took me there, saying, "This is the job for you," and we agreed terms with a local farmer, which was about £12.50 a year, and your board and lodgings. And my father attempted it a second year, took me along, and this time they agreed a fee of £16 per year. Quite a big increase in those days. But after starting work for the second year, I thought, well, this is no life for me. And after about 2 months, I ran away.
Why didn't you think it was the life for you?
Well, it was hard work, it was tedious, and there was no progress being made.
What kind of work was it?
Oh, on the land with horses and agriculture all the time.
Ploughing?
Ploughing the fields and all sorts around Ripplingham. And so I ran away and I came down to, this is at Ripplingham, I came down to North Ferriby and I obtained lodgings with a person in North Ferriby and went to the local farmer, because farming was all I knew then, and I got a job as a milk roundsman. Nice little Austin 7 van to go about with. And I delivered milk round all the local villages, Walton, Melton, Ferriby. And I was with them for 2 or 3 years.
How had the other farmer treated you, the one you ran away from?
Oh, he was quite, as things were then, he was reasonable. Treated you as every other farmer normally did. But as I was saying, by this time, my eldest brother came along one day and he said, I've joined the army. By this time I was 16, 17 years old, you see. And he said, I've run out of cigarettes. But if you come along with me to join the Territorial Army, I shall get half a crown. Which in those days was a lot of money. And I shall be able to buy cigarettes then. So we duly went along, signed on the dotted line.
Where did you go to sign up?
Walton Street, in Hull. 50th Northumbrian Division, Territorial Army. And we duly went along there and he was able to get his cigarettes. So at least he was happy.
Do you know the date?
No, I'm sorry, I can't think
of the year?
Yeah, it would be about 1936, 37. Yeah.
And which particular unit?
50th Northumbrian Division.
But was there a
Royal Army Service Corps. Yes.
Just going back to the farm work that you did before you ran away, you were ploughing with horses, were you?
Yes, yeah.
What were the main problems with of ploughing with horses in those days?
It was just hard work from dawn till dusk. There weren't any problems because by this time I was experienced enough to do the job comfortably.
But was it muscular work, or didn't the horses do all the muscular work?
No, well, you did a lot of muscular work because you had to control the plough, even though the horses pulled it. And I realised that wasn't the life for me.
Could you cope with the muscular work?
Oh, yes, I was quite fit enough, yeah.
But were you not liable to get into trouble because of running away when you're breaking your contract?
Well, I never went into that, and I never heard any more about it. So, obviously, the farmer may have contacted my father and told him what had happened, but he must have smoothed things over, and I never heard any more about it. I never got into trouble for doing that.
So what kind of training did you get with the Territorial Army?
Well, you went on a course annually. He was well paid in those days. And we taught driving, heavy goods vehicles, and all sorts of usual army training, square bashing and whatnot. Yeah.
How did you take to that?
Pardon?
How did you take to it?
Oh, very, very well, very well, very well. I tried to be as conscientious as it was possible to be and put heart and soul into it, and it proved beneficial. All the training you got, you see.
Did you learn to drive?
Oh, yeah.
Which other individuals do you remember being with at that time?
No, there was one or two pals from the village here who were in there, who joined the Territorial Army at the same time, and of course they're deceased now, they've gone.
Do you mean from Faraby?
Yes, yeah.
What do you remember happening next?
Well, we enjoyed ourselves, no doubt about that.
Yeah. Did you think at that time that a war was coming?
No.
Would you have joined the TA if you had known a war was coming?
Well, it's hard to answer a question like that, isn't it? Because you don't know, really.
So what are your next memories?
Well, then the memories were, I was actually on the milk round when I was informed in September, the year the war broke out, I was informed that it had broken out, and we were ordered to report to the barracks.
Did you not hear the broadcast of Neville Chamberlain declaring war?
No, I didn't, because I was on the milk round actually at the time, and we took the milk round then with private cars and whatnot.
Did you deliver on a Sunday morning?
Oh, yes, 7 days a week, yeah. And we were ordered to report to the barracks, and from then on, you lost all contact with civilian life. And we assembled on the Paragon station, full uniform and full pack of what we'd been issued with, and we were transported to Darlington. And we remained there for quite a long time.
What was the name of your Royal Army Service Corps unit? Did it have a number?
No, just the 50th Northumbrian, Royal Army Service Corps.
Any incidents that happened to you at Darlington?
Yes, we were... Fortunately, my brother, he volunteered to be a batman, an officer's batman. And we went to a big house where the officers were billeted. And of course, my brother, my eldest brother, he was very, very lucky because he was a batman to an officer, and he got the best accommodation. Along with the officers.
Did you not want to be a batman?
No, thank you.
Why not?
I didn't see any point in being in the army if you're just looking after one gentleman. And, of course, we were left then to erect tents, build trench, dig latrines in the park, which was at Darlington, and... the latrines consisted of, we dug a trench and we put a pole either end of the trench and put a pole across it. Anyone who wanted to use the latrines sat on the pole.
Was it safe?
As safe as it could be. There were no incidents of people falling in, anything like that. No. Apart from other things. And we were there quite a while, and one day it came up on parade, anybody like to volunteer for the Armoured Corps? Anybody interested in tanks and armoured vehicles? Oh, yeah. Several of us said we'd like to do that.
Why did you do that?
And... because it was, it obviously seemed a better life than being in a supply company, which the Royal Army Service Corps was, a supply company. And it was also better than, sounded better than being in the infantry. where you face the blunt force of the enemy. At least you had armour protection around you.
But did you not think that it would be more dangerous than being in the service corps?
No, I didn't at the time. No, as youngsters, anything appealed to you like that. It was more exciting, you see. So we were duly shipped to the 1st Derbyshire Yeomanry, which was part of the 6th Armour Division. And we were sent to Derby, and I remember erecting tents in a park in Derby. But from then on, things just progressed from there. We appeared to go more or less all over the country.
Was the Derbyshire Yeomanry at that time an established unit, or had it just
been... Yes, there was. 1st and 2nd Derbyshire Yeomanry.
Which one were you in?
The 1st. 1st Derbyshire Yeomanry. Yeah.
Did you get any kind of welcome from them?
Well, we integrated with the rest of them, and you made friends, and eventually, and oh, they got to know you, and you got to know them, and that was it. We're quite happy with them.
Did they discriminate against you because you weren't from Derbyshire?
No. We were integrated into the regiment, and we made the best of it. Yeah. And then, eventually, after having several positions all around the country, we did a lot of training in Abergavenny in Wales, where there was a armoured and tank training course there. Beautiful, we loved it there.
Did the units have any armour at that time? Was it equipped with armour?
Armoured cars. Daimler armoured cars, whatnot. Because it was mostly an Humber armoured cars. By this time, we hadn't become acquainted with any tanks at all. It was just armoured cars, armoured vehicles.
And what was your job at that time?
Pardon?
What was your own job?
Well, I always did like motorcycles. And there was a vacancy for dispatch riders. And I joined a team of dispatch riders for the Yeomanry. And eventually, after I got my first stripe as a Honoured Lance Corporal, I took over the training of dispatch riders and motorcycles mechanics.
What did you think of the motorbikes that you were issued with?
Oh, they were very good. At the time, they were most modern. Matchless and Triumph. And Norton's. We enjoyed that. And we managed to get down to Diss in Norfolk, in Nissenhuts. And it was there that I ran the school of motorcycle mechanics and dispatch riding. And we eventually progressed, and we moved down to Felton in Middlesex. And I always remember that. We were in private digs, combination, Viola Lodge, Viola Avenue, Felton. And we operated from the village hall then. And you can imagine the dashing dispatch riders up and down the village. And everybody was cheering and whatnot. In those were the days without crash helmets. And eventually we did get round to them. And then we moved up to Scotland.
Had you been in any bombing by the German Air Force?
No, none at all. None at all. By this time, none at all. None at all. And we eventually moved up to Scotland. in Ayrshire, and we were stationed at just outside Kilmarnock. And we really enjoyed it there. We were camping in fields, open fields with tents erected, and we used to dawn till dusk, of course, and because I didn't like guard duty night and whatnot, which nobody did in those days, 2 hours on, 4 off, I made every effort to get promoted, put a little bit more extra in. So eventually I was a guard commander, and all you had to cope with were these orderly officer coming around periodically to check on you doing your duty. And from then on we sailed from Glasgow to North Africa.
Can you describe the process of getting from Britain to North Africa in detail?
Yes, we went round the from North Africa, from Glasgow, we went round the, I can't name the troop ship, but we went round the Isle of Arran, and it took a long time to get to North Africa. I think it was like a period of about 10 days. And of course we were zigzagging all the time to miss the enemy submarines if possible. And we landed at Naples.
What do you remember about the ship that took you?
Well, we're all in, it was a troop ship, adapted, and we all used Amex, which was very difficult to start with until you got used to them, because you just got in and rolled out onto the floor. And everybody was in close proximity to each other, more or less touching, and it was difficult. But being all young men, we enjoyed it, we really did.
And the name of the ship?
I can't think of the name. I can't remember the name of the ship.
What rank did you have by then?
By then I was still a lance corporal. I hadn't made any further progress.
So you went to Italy, not to Tunisia?
Sorry?
You said you went to Naples?
No,
you?
I'm sorry. I should have said we went to Algiers from there. And I remember an incident when the ship docked at Algiers. We had to parade on the dock side, and we were all lined up as usual, and a shot rang out, and two or three chaps to one side of me, he dropped down dead. And he'd been accidentally shot by another chap in the front who had mishandled his rifle. But that was an experience we had to cope with.
What happened to the man who'd accidentally fired the shot?
Well, he was actually put on a charge, and that was it. What happened, I don't know it. When it was accidentally, obviously couldn't have been charged with murder or anything like that, could he? And I always remember Algiers because there were the people there. They didn't welcome us as such.
Was this the French or the Arabs?
Two, both, one of each. Yeah. And I remember clearly that if one of the soldiers had ever come into contact with an Arab girl, that was the end of his life. He was found dead in the tent the next morning with his throat cut.
Did that ever happen?
Oh, yes, yes, it happened several times, quite near me. And by this time, I obviously volunteered for dispatch riding in Africa. And
but did the French citizens also show hostility?
No, they weren't too bad, really, because it was mostly the Arabs who showed the hostility. And, of course, the Germans were... We were warned before we went on the mission, delivering a dispatch of what to look out for. And the Germans tried every trick in the book to stop dispatches getting through. And the favourite thing was to put a wire across the road so that any dispatch riders who came in contact was decapitated immediately. We got to know all these tricks and where there was likely to be these wires and things, and we avoided them, which is possible. And
how did the British soldiers get to know these Arab girls?
Well, obviously there was brothels and kasbahs, which was immediately put out of bounds. I never went near any of those, like. I was the upstanding NCO at the time, and I wouldn't dream of doing anything like that.
Did you know of any comrades who got caught by these wires that were put up?
No. We were very well warned about these things before we set off on any dispatches, and but that was a favourite thing, and my first incidence of being wounded was in North Africa, and I wasn't wounded by the enemy. We took over. Frenchmen were fleeing in front of the enemy, and we took over the houses that they vacated. Did the British Army. And obviously it was, the law was that no lights to be showing whatsoever. And I led the troop into one of these houses, and everything was booby trapped. Even if you picked a pen up, or they would, for some reason, they'd leave the dead German bodies with watches showing them and so on. But we were warned, never touch anything like that, because they would booby trap and blow your hands off. Anyway, I led the troops into this vacated house, and it was just as the French had left them. The beds were still warm, and the first thing on my mind was to make sure the lads got a cup of tea. So I found a pit in the garage for the cars, and it was quite good. I took the primus stove down into the pit, filled it with petrol, pumped it up, lit a match. I don't remember anymore, till I woke up in hospital.
What had happened?
Well, the fumes, it had blown up. As soon as it struck a match, that many fumes in it blew the place up. And
was that because it was an enclosed space, you mean?
Yes, and I was badly burnt. And I woke up in hospital, I don't know where it was, and it was run by nuns and monks. And in the next bed to me, there was a chap screaming, a soldier screaming, and he was obviously shell-shocked. And the nurses come, and the nuns, and they rolled him over, and he had a live grenade under his body. So if that had gone off, we'd have all been wiped out. That was the first incident I had of being wounded.
Were you wounded in Algiers or outside Algiers?
Outside Algiers, yeah, yes.
A long way outside?
Not far from Constantine. I remember it quite well.
And you say that, was it French Allied troops who'd fled, did you say?
Pardon?
Did you say that French Allied troops had fled from the Germans?
No, the French civilians who were residents there, they were fleeing in front of the Germans. And I was flown to hospital from Constantine, which was an airport there. Now, that was the first time I'd ever flown in my life.
Where were you burned? Whereabouts on your body were you burned?
All my legs and arms and everything. Yeah. And I haven't been able to grow any stubble since.
So your face was burned?
Not so much as my arms and my legs.